League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
DJ Q for bringing us into the show in such style. He's absolutely right. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Hey, everybody, it's an encore presentation. You know, like when your favorite band, like, leaves the stage, and they're off waving, and then all of a sudden, whoa, the show's not over. They come back, and they come, you know, come and do two more. Well, that's exactly what we're going to do. It's an encore presentation one more time before we close out 2015. Jay's Plays is brought to you by Spring 44 Vodka. It's the cold, crisp, clear Colorado spring water that makes the best of vodka in the entire world. Spring 44, spring for some today. And by Swifties, fine American Irish pubs and restaurants all across I-90 and I-87. All right, everybody, we've got a fabulous show to wrap up 2015 for you. A big thank you to our previous guests who are on, Rand Morissette and Tom Doak, talking about their new volume of The Confidential Guide. Everybody run out and get a copy as fast as you can. And, of course, to Bruce Charlton, the world-famous golf course architect who's redone, along with his partner, Robert Trent Jones Jr., Poppy Hills, and won the Best Restoration of the Year. We're going to finish up the year with Gary Van Sickle's going to come on, and we're going to talk some NFL. We're going to talk about the end of Tiger Woods' career. We're going to talk about all of Dave's sports events for 2016, but we have a big surprise for you before we do that. As you know, I am also in charge of pop culture and rock and roll music at our station and in our magazine. After all, I am a music attorney, everybody. And so it's my job to bring you the very best before you may have heard of it. And we've got one of the hot new rising stars to talk to right now. She's a concert pianist since she was very young, but at the same time, she's taken the jam band scene by storm. She's young, she's brilliant, she's beautiful. Give a warm Jay's Plays welcome to Holly Bowling. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jay.
It's so glad to have you on. You've got some terrific things coming up for 2016. First and foremost, you're going to be the first concert of the year on the jam band scene. You're going to be playing at the Cutting Room in New York City on the 1st, and you've played there before, haven't you?
I have. I was just there this past summer and had a fantastic time.
Great. And you're also going to be a... Oh, yes, you like to make friends with Grant Candles, don't you?
I sure do.
And you're also going to be playing one of the jam cruises in January. So tell us a little bit about the Cutting Room gig on the 1st, and tell us a little bit about the jam cruise you're going to be on in January.
Well, I'm really excited for the Cutting Room because it's smack dab in the middle of the Phish New Year's run, and I'm going to catch those shows as well. And so to get to wake up and start off 2016 with a show followed by a show by my favorite band and get the chance to play for people who are in town for the Phish run, just a few blocks away from the Garden before we all head over there, is just going to be great. I feel like we're all going to be sharing some tremendous energy in there, and I'm very excited to get on that piano and have some fun.
New Year's is always a wonderful time. As I tell my friends, I get to sing my Christmas carols at Christmas, and I get to sing my New Year's carols on New Year's. very much so. You know, it's very festive. It's a holiday tradition. You know, and it is like seeing family with both a PH and an M. It's such a great, warm, you know, scene. And, you know, you've become a part of it now. You've risen like a firework in the sky. starting with your album that you released last year called Distillation of a Dream, and now with a whole bunch of tours. So tell us a little bit about your album and how you came to record it.
The album actually started as addendum to the first thing that sort of spawned all this, and that is I transcribed and arranged Phish's Tahoe Tweezer, their version of Tweezer that they played at Lake Tahoe at a show on July 31st, 2013. And it was a really landmark version of the song, 37 minutes long and just fantastic improvised music. So I wrote that down note for note and arranged it for solo piano. And when I put that out there, I just as a video, I just did it for kicks for myself, but it really took off. And people kept asking me for a recording of it. And I didn't have anything that was great quality audio-wise in a recording that I'd want to put out there. So I crowdfunded an album to go into the studio and record my version of the Tahoe Tweezer, and it ended up turning into a double album that I've put out there, and the whole project was just insanely fun. So I've been doing shows since then, putting Phish's music into the solo piano context and really having a great time with it.
Now, teach us a little bit about how one goes about taking music produced by four rock and roll musicians and transcribing it down to 10 fingers on a piano.
it's definitely a process. There's a lot of decisions about what to put in and what to leave out, and that can really affect the final product, of course. A lot of times it's about being less literal and more trying to capture the spirit of what's going on. So I might not include every note that's played, but I try to get the overall feeling of the motion or where the music is heading at that point. But as far as the process, it's a lot of hours with headphones on and sitting down with a piece of manuscript paper and a pencil and just writing down what I hear. And then step two is to take it over to the piano and give it a run through and take it out for a spin and see what works and what needs to go back to the drawing board. So,
about how many hours a day do you play on the piano?
That is entirely dependent on the day. When I am home and I am not on the road, I can sit at the piano for hours on end. I'll sit down at the end of the night around midnight with the intention of just playing for a few minutes, and I look at the clock and it's 3 a.m. and I've already practiced 6 hours that day and I just can't stop. And then there's other times when I'm on the road and the only time I get to play is when I'm on stage and there's no time for practicing or working out new stuff. So it just really varies. It's a roller coaster.
I hear you on that, and I absolutely agree, because there's been many, many a night where I've sat down at 10 o'clock to start to write a story or start to do an article, and the next thing I know, I look up and it's 2:30. Now, are there nights or days when you're sitting there at the piano and instead of, you know, flowing beautifully, it's sort of like trying to chisel it out of a block of cement?
Yeah, sure. There's days when stuff really flows and there's days when it doesn't, but on days when it's not flowing, that's a good time to sit down and pick out some smaller parts of arrangements or songs that you've been working on that you don't quite have and work on practicing on the nuts and bolts a little bit more than the big picture and letting new stuff flow. So there's always some kind of work to be done. And if one thing isn't working that day, you just try something else.
I have a bit of a surefire cure for writer's block. You know, sometimes I'll get stuck. And when I do, I'll just fall back on a simple thought, which is write the truest sentence that you know. And then all of a sudden, I'll just give me a completely different view of what I was writing. And even if I have to scrap, you know, a couple of pages of what I did, it usually sends me off in the right direction. You know, what's the equivalent to writer's block for you, and how do you overcome it?
I guess when you're writing stuff or sitting down to just improvise off the cuff and nothing seems to be coming, I like to take it down to something as simple as possible and just restrict myself to a couple notes or one rhythm. And I also love to do this with the lights off and just play in the dark so I can kind of shut off all my other sentences and just focus on one small little piece and see where it leads. And my other favorite thing is play what you think is going to be the right thing and get the pattern going. And then this is part of the playing in the dark thing. Sometimes you'll miss a note because you're playing with your eyes closed in the pitch black. And sometimes that wrong note will send you off in a direction that you might not have thought to take, but it can go some interesting places. So that little element of mistake or random chance can sometimes be all it takes to spur things off in an interesting direction.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that, actually. I grew up on progressive rock. You know, my first albums were Genesis and Rush and Pink Floyd. And so by that avenue, I naturally gravitated to Phish. Because when I got into Phish, you know, it was when Junta came out and Long Boy, you know, and so plenty of the longer suites and longer, more complicated and intricate pieces, you know, were what drew me. And part of the fact that, you know, time signatures aren't always going to be 4/4, keys aren't always going to be major keys, you know, there's going to be some wild chords in there, but it makes for more interesting music, I find. Sure, we can all sing and dance to a great three-chord wonder, but I wonder if progressive music itself sometimes gets a little bit of a short shift because mainstream America and mainstream music industry kind of, you know, overlook it because it's not quick and, you know, easy.
Sure. Yeah, and I think, you know, the music that appeals to a lot of people is the stuff that grabs them on first listen. And I generally find the stuff that is hard to listen to at first sometimes, but takes 5 or 6 listens to really start to appreciate and latch onto. That's the stuff that has staying power for me. And some of this stuff isn't something you're going to put on while you're driving to work or you're sitting around doing other things. It's not background music. It's something you want to really listen actively to. And if you're not making time in your life for active listening to music, you're maybe never going to get into this stuff. But that the stuff that takes a little more time to get into for me is the stuff that really stays with me forever. So I'm with you on that one.
Now, tell us a little bit how you got started playing the piano.
I've been playing piano since basically as long as I can remember. I started in kindergarten. I learned to play by the Suzuki method, so a lot of ear training, which has really helped me in what I'm doing now, you know, learning stuff by ear and writing out my own arrangements. But I played classical piano for years and years and majored in classical piano performance in college. And, you know, at the same time, I was catching all these shows, Phish shows and other shows, just a ton of live music and sort of had this double life of classical piano and then the live music scene. And this most recent incarnation of the music I've been doing is the first time when those two threads have really come together. And it's been cool to see those two parts of my life finally find a happy meeting ground.
Boy, can I tell you exactly the same story, okay? Lawyer and journalist on one hand and, you know, Phish on the other, okay? As I used to say,
oh, yeah.
corporate by day, crispy by night.
Yeah, so but you know, at Madison Square Garden, which one am I going to get?
You know, I turn them off pretty well. Okay, you know, when I'm in, I mean, it's funny. The other music lawyers sometimes look at me funny because, like, well, why are you singing along? Why are you dancing? Okay, Bowling for Soup's been a long time, lifetime client of mine. Love those guys. Okay, and we'll go to shows, a bunch of us. And I'll be down there dancing and singing along with everybody else. And, you know, I'll look around, and you know how some of the music industry guys get. They'll all sit there in the back of the room with their arms folded and their scowl on their face. You know, and the same thing happens every time. You know, they'll look at me and they're like, well, why are you singing and dancing? Like, what do you think? I love the music, you know. And I'll tell you something. The artists love that, okay. The band after band after band used to say to me, Jay, we love you because you were out there with a big smile on your face, and then we knew the music was good. When we see all these guys standing there with their arms folded, you know, we don't really know if they're really enjoying themselves or not. And that kind of sucks for us up on stage, you know. We like to see everybody having a good time. And that's the wonderful thing about Phish, is the symbiosis between band and audience. The band gets psyched, then the audience gets psyched, then the band gets psyched, then the audience gets psyched. You know, there's something about the jam band scene where the fourth wall is broken down. And it's true in any aesthetic thing that you do, whether it's a book, a play, a movie. You break down that wall, and it's easier for the audience to connect.
I think it's the greatest thing about this music scene, and really any art form in general. If you're able to connect with people that you've probably never met before, you know, as a musician or as someone in the crowd and feeling something from the music up there, but really have not just something that you're taking from them, but something that you're giving back. And to have that kind of communication and exchange of energy going on is just the coolest thing. I mean, there's not that many spaces in our lives today where that happens. And I think it's just the greatest.
that is the true measure of success of an artist. You know, it's not necessarily how much money you have. It's not necessarily, you know, how much exposure you've had. It's the longevity of it. We're going to spend the rest of our lives getting less dumb at this profession. And you know, in order for it to be a true career, you know, it's got to be more than just a fleeting flash in the pan. Now, let's back up for a half a second, though. What else besides fish do you have on your iPad?
On my iPad?
Yeah.
What else are you listening to, or what other arrangements and stuff I'm doing?
Let's start with, what else are you listening to? What else do you like? What do you want to recommend to our listeners to go and check out?
Oh, wow. I listen to all kinds of different stuff. I listen to a little bit of Americana. I really like David Rollins and Gillian Welch. I listen to... I love New Orleans music. Definitely get down with Rebirth and Dr. John and Professor Longhair. I definitely like going back to some of the legendary keyboard players. And I don't know. I could take that in a lot of directions.
Well, if you were to tell the fans, hey guys, go outside and listen to this too. Anybody else besides the ones you just mentioned?
You know, recent thing that just came out with the Fare Thee Well shows this summer, the set break music from that. I don't know if you caught any of those shows, but
I did. Yes, I listened intently, and we'll have a discussion about that.
I thought that was some very interesting concept to have set break music written for these shows that reference and indirectly tied into the music, but didn't out and out quote it and. I'm not sure if that's been done before, but I thought it was a really interesting concept, and I love that they released it.
See, now, in between sets of those shows, I was busy writing, doing up reviews, and getting all that organized. And I know I've been promising everybody, you know, my article on Foo Fighters and on The Grateful Dead and on, you know, my thoughts on the best concert of the year for 2015. And that's going to be coming out just before we walk in the door on New Year's Eve. But I do have to give this year, okay, I know they're going to be mad at me, okay? Already Al Schneer of Mo looked at me and he goes, Jay, we're going to have to shoot you now because you're pimping Sports Lock. But I'm sorry, but Foo Fighters won this year. I know, Al. Al and I have been friends for a very, very, very long time. We grew up in the same town. Our fathers used to have breakfast together, so he's permitted to say things like that to me.
You know, the whole bit, though, of Dave Grohl getting up there and playing a show with a broken leg, that's a pretty game-winning move right there. I mean, that's like pitching through an injury when the game's on the line and you're in the playoffs. I mean, he clearly pulled it all together and just went for it. You got to respect that.
As my mentor says, you gotta play hurt. The funniest thing was watching him run or drive around on stage in the wheelchair, pimped out to look like the Game of Thrones throne, but instead of swords, it was guitar necks and lady lights. Wait, and it gets better, though. Okay, you know the old cliche about us music lawyers doing deals on bar napkins? Well, he designed that thing on a bar napkin while he was in the hospital. he even showed it to us. Okay, he's telling us the whole story about how he was in Sweden and he fell off the stage. And he goes, yeah, man, I was saved by this guy, Lars. And he tries to pretend, you know, imitate Lars, but he does a German accent instead of a Swedish accent. We're laughing hysterically in that. And then this guy, he's got a whole PowerPoint presentation. As he's telling us the story, he's like, here's my broken leg. Here I am in the hospital. And here's the drawing on the napkin. It's like this totally crude drawing. And I promise everybody we're going to have that in the article. So you'll be able to see the hand-scrawled, you know, flown from heaven or hell, whichever it might be.
That needs to be framed somewhere as memorabilia for sure. That's
it needs to go in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is where it needs to go. Okay, that flown needs to be hanging from the rafters just like Fish's famous hot dog. You know, it's funny. I do want to throw this out there. I'm going to get up on my soapbox for a second. I do have to say that I was disappointed, even a little bit hurt, that I thought Fish was a shoo-in to be a first ballot Hall of Fame entry for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. With all of the things they've done in the 31 years that they've been in existence, all of the creativeness, all of the uniqueness, all of the, you know, ways that they changed the industry. You know, the internet started at the same time that Fishnet started, and you cannot deny that the internet was what helped make and break that band. And now the same thing's kind of happening for you. You know, the grassroots movement, you know, you signed with Pledge Music, which is a crowdfunded thing. You know, we all love Benji Rogers. You know, there's a great story for you. There's a guy who got screwed over by record companies and decided, I'm going to do something to make sure that nobody ever gets screwed over again. I'm going to give everybody a fair shake. And boom, here you are, you know. 7 or 8 months ago, you were, you know, playing your piano, and now you're playing to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. You know, has it been a bit of a whirlwind ride for you?
It's definitely been a whirlwind. It's been quite the ride, but it's one I'm very happy to be on.
Well, excellent. We're going to come back in about 1 minute, everybody. Holly's going to talk a little bit more about where you can hear her music, where you can get the album, and how you can follow all of her exploits. And then we're going to talk a little bit of baseball as well, because one of the things that's the most iconic about Holly is that San Francisco Giants ball cap that she likes to wear. But right now, I'm going to leave you in the very capable hands of DJ Q. Everybody, you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. We'll be right back.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.